18th, we could have everybody take a seat so we can continue moving. We have several events tonight, so we need to get through this so that other electives can get off to their respective cities for some of the other community events that are going on tonight and stuff, so we don't get anybody late. So can we have a roll call, please?
Flight?
Here.
Cathedral City?
Here.
Coachella? Desert Hot Springs?
Present.
Indian Wells?
Here.
India?
Present.
La Quinta?
Present.
Palm Desert?
Here.
Palm Springs?
Here.
Rancho Mirage?
Here.
Riverside County Fourth District?
Here.
Riverside County Fifth District? I'll tell you who we have for.
Thank you very much. And before we go through the Pledge of Allegiance, I just want to, we've got a couple of new members that are here and a couple of members that are rotating off and leaving. So I want to say thank you to Adam Scott, Luffy Ramos Watson, and Steve Planet, as they have are no longer members. And say congratulations to Scott Mass, Mayor of Desert Hot Springs, Gwen Mailer, Mayor of Indio, and Robert Moon. I know you're, I think Chris is going to be the voting member tonight. And then,
yes, yes.
Okay, so Chris, thank you. You've been here for quite a long time, so we appreciate that.
Amen.
So could we have Mr. Matz, Mayor Matz, will you please stand and pledge allegiance?
Absolutely. Please stand and place your hand on your heart. Remembering today is Pearl Harbor Day, and also remembering those in our hearts, so what happened in San Bernardino last week. Ready to begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much. And public comments. I have one public comment. Gary Lindros. Lindros. New York, I'm sorry.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, gotcha.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Gary Luders, and first I want to salute all the veterans, my fellow veterans in the area. I am speaking on behalf of all cyclists in the area and out of the area that have come here to ride bikes. Speaking about safety issues, I've been cycling for 45 years, so I'm a self-proclaimed expert on cycling issues. And my professional career, I spent over 40 years in aviation, Air Force pilot in the 60s, flew missions in Vietnam, and retired American Airlines captain in 31 years. Plus, I spent 4 years on the Palm Springs Airport Commission. So I know safety, okay? A couple points. Bicycle issues. Rancho Mirage claims, and rightfully so, that they have 30 miles of Class 2 striped bike lanes in their city. And from a cyclist's point of view, much appreciated. Thank you very much. They also make a claim that they have 30 miles of Class 1 bike lanes in their city. They claim that sidewalks are Class 1. That is so wrong. The Highway Design Manual, Chapter 1000, is the Bible for bikeway planning and design, okay? It clearly states that using a sidewalk as a bicycle path is not acceptable. It is unsafe. Some of you, if you have experienced riding a bicycle on a sidewalk, if you're going the opposite direction of traffic, and a car is in a driveway, he's looking left for traffic. Bicycle coming, he just, the car pulls out. There's a conflict right there, so that is totally unsafe. The Public Works Department Chairman Mark of the Rancho Mirage is a civil engineer. He should know that manual. But he kept his mouth shut, but he works in Rancho Mirage. So that is a bogus claim. Another point I want to make about safety in Rancho Mirage, City Manager Randy, on, May 7th of this year, Desert Sun, he clearly states that sidewalks are not safe for pedestrians. I'm sorry, crosswalks. Crosswalks are not safe for pedestrians, bicycles, and joggers. If crosswalks are not safe, then what is? heaven forbid, if there was ever an accident, a personal injury while you were home that town. So that is clearly a mistaken plan there. The city attorney, Steve, he let that slide. He knows better, but that is to claim that that's unsafe in a crosswalk is so wrong. So Ransom Mirage has some issues. Mayor Hobart has won his case.
Thank you.
Let it slide, okay?
The time's up. Thank you. I have no other public comments, so we'll move on to the executive
committee. Yes, I'm sorry I'm late. Just chasing the dog down, but yes, I'd like to do a public comment.
Sir, go ahead. You have 3 minutes.
Maybe just in time. I'm Bob Terry with People Over Pollution, and I'm guessing that all of you guys have seen the HIP documents. If you haven't, give me contacts and I'll send them to you. They were released last week. I know Tom has seen them and John has seen them, and all of you should have seen it. In this study, which CB Link paid for, it shows that basically, a little bit disorganized here, had to rush to get in. CV Link can reduce air pollution slightly in two ways, reduce car trips and paving may reduce airborne dust. The annual emissions for particulate matter, PM2.5, which is where CV Link gets $17.4 million of funding from the Sentinel from the mitigation funds, are by 2021, 560 pounds, by 2035, 1,034 pounds. Compared to the $17.4 million and the percentage that that takes from the Sentinel's mitigation funds, 34.8% after AQMD took their $2.5 million, it should be mitigating not 560 or 1,034, but 41,760 pounds a year. Should look into this. This money should not be spent on a bike path. It does not mitigate the pollution that it got the funding for. Thank you.
Thank you. Seeing.
I feel that, of course.
So that's on 7C.
Well, I just like to assume if I should do it tomorrow. Let's get it out. I love these meetings, but only for a very short time.
Sir, I'm sorry. Jim, come on.
I could have a heart attack if I waited.
We have paramedics waiting.
Thank you. My name is Jim Rockblatt. I still live in Palm Springs. I'm showing up at a few of these meetings. I'm one of Hobart's newbies. Thank you, Mr. Hobart. I've been paying attention to all the pros and cons of CV Link. And I still come up with the same conclusion that it's a good idea. I've been riding the bike as an adult in the Coachella Valley since 1971. And I used to commute from Palm Springs to Indio. And if you look at the way the valley's laid out, the roads kind of run north-south and east-west, but the valley runs kind of a south-southeast or north-northwest. So the most direct route through all our communities is along Highway 111, which is a nightmare on a bicycle or a low-speed vehicle. But parallel to Highway 111, and all the different communities that line this valley, short of Desert Hot Springs, sorry, Desert Hot Springs, and Blythe, I used to ride in Blythe, too, before I moved to the valley. But it just makes so much sense if they want to encourage alternate means of transportation that hits the business community to go from Palm Springs to Cathedral City to Rancho Mirage, where actually one of the nicest sections of trail exists in Rancho Mirage. And there's a beautiful little loop you can do from Country Club and Duval down to Morningside over to Frank Sinatra, to Duval, or to Morningside, and then over to Country Club, and then to Butler Abrams Trail. You know how to do it. And I'm just hoping that with so many of you that already demonstrated support, that you could go after this. Because like Mr. Luders, if you ride a bike, and you understand this, if you don't ride a bike, it's like you don't have a clue that it's a viable means of transportation unless you get out there and try it. I'd like to go out there and ride with all of you on that little loop I just described. It would be sort of a dream come true to see all of you out there trying it out so you actually experience what it is we're spending all this endless time talking about. Thank you.
Thank you. Just a point of clarification, can we have the record reflect that Supervisor Ashley and Eric Hernandez is here?
It's a public comment. I couldn't get to the cards right away, but so I wanted just to speak on the issue I brought this up before, the issue of the ad hoc committees. You know, I truly believe that there's a misuse or misunderstanding of what ad hoc is.
Michael
Harrington speaking, and I don't know who your attorney is. I think they're here, but I think they need to come. You know, I don't want my attorney to criticize another, but I think we need to err on the side of public engagement. Especially in the area of public safety, they seem to be using the ad hoc committees too much. The ad hoc committees in the public safety, they have this DOI ad hoc committee. They've had it for years. They meet apparently they meet right after the regular committee meets. But it's not ad hoc. And then when you do have truly ad hoc, you could still allow people to go. You know, when you're calling and saying, when is the meeting, I'd like to go, and they don't let you know. That happened to me as one of your staffers, and you're disengaging the public. You should be involved. I think law enforcement wants public engagement, needs public feedback, and I don't know if they're aware that really someone is really keeping the public out of that dialogue, and then special interest groups get in. I see that, you know, RAP is very involved now, Trisha Gervais with the Hillary Clinton group. That's fine, but there's many other groups. We don't know when these meetings are. We don't have a chance to get involved either. We'd like to. So, okay, just please review the ad hoc and err on the side of getting everyone involved and having a dialogue. People want to get involved. Again, Michael Harrington, thank you.
Thank you very much. Mike Fontana.
Thank you. You know, I really didn't intend to come to speak today, but I heard Jim talk about the lovely little loop, and the lovely little loop that he's referring to, it really is lovely. It's quiet, it's tranquil, it's peaceful, it's rural, and it's called Butler Abrams Trail, and we've been here before to ask you to amend the master plan to delete the Butler Abrams Trail from CB Link. And it's a big request, and so I want to kind of paint a picture for you about this quiet, tranquil, peaceful place. That mostly it's dog walkers and some joggers and a few bicyclists that use it. But what the master plan does to the 1.2 miles of Butler Abrams Trail is that it puts six access points on it. One is commercial. I think the commercial access point contains restrooms and charging stations and parking lot. One is local, and one is regional, the regional one on Country Club Drive, which is the most intense. And then there are three neighborhood access points, maybe 1.2 miles. When you overlay that with the neighborhood electric vehicle plan, there are two more access points on the Butler Abrams Trail. And we kind of feel like we're being attacked, that this has become the central point, the most intense use of the CB Link plan. And this quiet little spot that now has Michael Wolfson Park as an access point, Country Club Drive as an unimproved access point, and Desert Cove as an informal access point, is if implemented the way you have it designed, is going to have 8 access points, 2 of them with parking lots and facilities. And we kind of feel like we're being under attack, and what we have that's so special for us, the gym is used and others is used, is going to be lost forever. And we want you to consider that in your deliberations. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Seeing no other public comments, we'll move to Executive Committee Director's comments. And I saved this one special when I introduced the new members and the old members, but I want to say thank you to Ty as being the Vice Chair. This is his last meeting, but it was being good having you help with everything that goes on at the Executive Committee. Thank you very much. Any other committee member comments?
Thank you. All of you probably have gotten emails or have seen that SCAG has released the draft regional transportation plan, sustainable community strategy for comments. There's a 2-month comment window. This is just the sustainable community strategy. The actual RTP and the environmental documents looks about like that. Jan has read them all, so she can tell you all about them. If you really want to get the detail, you can get that online. However, on January 11th, here in this office, there will be a meeting for everyone to be able to give their comments, have a public hearing on the plan. January 11th from 12 to 1. I would encourage all of you, if you yourselves as electeds can't attend, to please send your staff so that they have an understanding. Because no transportation projects can be built, regardless of funding, unless it's in the RTP. So it is extremely important that we understand what's in here, and this plan goes from 2016 to 2040, so it's really important. We are well represented on the RC at SCAG with Jan Harnick and Mike Wilson, as well as myself, but it would be very good to have everyone else on board so that they understand and get the word back to us in terms of how you want to go.
Mayor Holbrook.
Thank you. Excuse me, because there's no CD link update, today, I'd like to briefly explain what happened in this last week or so that finally, to me, exposed what I consider to be CVAG's plan to withdraw considerable sums of money, $20 million for construction costs, apparently, and either from $600,000 to $1 million a year for maintenance of the CD link, that their plan was to draw this from Measure A funds. Measure A funds were never intended to be used in such a manner. And the two or three committees, I'm not exactly sure about how many, included the Transportation Technical Advisory Subcommittee and Planning and Technical Planning Subcommittee on November 23rd, 2015 meeting. And in the staff report, it explains how CVAG intends to approach Measure A funds. I'm reading from a portion of the staff report. It says, the significant active transportation infrastructure projects into the TIPS. Let's strike that. The intent of the current update, as approved by the Executive Committee, is to integrate regionally significant active transportation infrastructure projects into the TIPS so that CVAG member agencies can be eligible for future funding opportunities. There's another paragraph that says, only those active transportation projects that are identified as regionally significant using the criteria above are recommended for incorporation into the TIPS. Incorporating regional active transportation into the TIPS enables those projects to be evaluated for costs, for costs paid for by major aid, is my additional last two words were mine, not part of the quote. So what it amounts to is what the voters intended in 2002 when they passed Measure A was that Measure A funds would go to the rehabilitation of deteriorating roadways, bridges, intersections. The fact that this staff report tells us that there's going to be, if CMAQ gets its way and the executive committee buys into it, they will have a new category. They will say to the voters, well, we think you really meant, yes, roadway improvements. However, a brand new project like this, if we deem it regionally significant, and what could be a more vague or ambiguous term than that, but if we do deem it regionally significant, then we qualify for Measure A funds. I personally think that is a gross misuse of Measure A funds, if that indeed is the plan. There is in the preamble of Measure A the statement, if the voters read anything, they read the preamble. And in the preamble it says that without these funds, these Measure A funds, in other words, voters, if you don't approve these Measure A funds, the roadways will, to use the words of the measure, will crumble. So they were seriously considered with solving the problem that we face, and that is deteriorating, debilitated roadways. Now we're told that there will be an effort to take these funds and instead of giving them to debilitated roads to improve them, of which we have about $3 billion worth waiting for our money that are on the TIPS list. $3 billion. CBAG gets about $20 million a year. And we have, and it's got, it has a reserve of about $20 million or so. And I could be wrong in that, but that's what I, how I interpret some documents that I've read. To say that out of that small amount of money, $20 million a year, with a $3 billion string of debilitated roadways that are graded by priority, is certainly not something that the voters intend. And I would suggest that we seriously consider it. When these issues come before our committees that we're in, we seriously consider what the intent of Measure A was. It wasn't to accommodate a brand new project. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Any other committee comments? Seeing none, executive comments?
Three items. One, I do want to acknowledge for those that could not attend the Avenue 52 ribbon-cutting ceremony. It was a fantastic ceremony, a great project, and just to remind everybody, there are all sorts of deadlines imposed, some of them, in fact, by CVAG, but a lot of them dealing with some state and federal funding that that project received, and the Coachella staff and elected officials did a fantastic job of pulling it off. It's a great project. I think the ceremony went off pretty well, too. Secondly, I do want to acknowledge the Board of Supervisors. This board did approve another air quality COLMAC grant for our street sweeping program, $150,000 a year for the regional street sweeping program. Combine that, as Mr. Pettis knows, with MSRC, or what's it called, Mobile Source Review Committee money. From the South Coast Air Quality Management District's committee, we're able to substantially fund our regional street sweeping program, and that's a big deal for all of the cities here and the county. And lastly, just a housekeeping item on the agenda itself. I think it makes more sense, given the interest in the room, to swap items 7C and 7B. So we'll consider Mayor Peabody's request as a second item on the agenda. And then we'll end with a very interesting presentation on our number one project in our TPPS, and that's Jefferson Interchange.
Thank you. With that, we'll move to the consent agenda. Is there a motion to approve the consent agenda?
I would first like to ask to pull 6A, the minutes.
Okay.
Move the ballot.
Second.
Okay. Motion and a second. Do we need a roll call or all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Light abstains.
And Mr. Chairman, we typically would consider consent calendar items held over at the end of the meeting. We may have a bit of a quorum problem if the meeting runs late. Maybe we could consider the minutes right now if Mayor Hogan aren't prepared to do so.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, consider waiting until the end of the meeting because we have some people that need to leave and we may not have a quorum at the end. You want to take the approval of the minutes now?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
That would be ideal.
Perfect. We'll look at consent item A, which is approval of September 28, 2015, executive committee meeting minutes.
Am I going to what you think? Something that I'm sure that many of us have noticed is that we have entries in our minutes which do not identify who voted for or against or abstained in a vote. The Brown Act, Section 54953, lead part. Okay, well, I'm making a kind of a general comment at the moment. Unless you have something further to say, I'll wait for it.
We're specifically talking about.
So I'm talking, I don't know, whoever's interrupting me, I'm asking her to finish and decide if there's anything more she wants to say. If she does, say it now rather than.
Well, I'm sorry, I didn't realize you were speaking to me. What I wanted to know was where you said that they don't say specifically who abstained.
If you'd given me one more breath, I would have told you. And I'll tell
Thank
you.
Okay, go ahead.
Thank
sorry.
You.
First, I'm going to read the Brown Act, Section 54953C2. The legislative body of a local agency shall publicly report any action taken and the vote or abstention on that action of each member present for the action. And Mr. Chairman, I submit on that. I think the Brown Act has had a minor change in it, but it modifies things significantly. Every vote that we take should be reported in the manner that we know who voted yes and who voted no. That is what this states. The legislative body of a local agency shall publicly report any action taken and the vote or abstention on that action of each member present for the action. So I suggest that we adopt that process. Our policies and procedures manual has a paragraph under public testimony that requires that when someone speaks on a matter that, quote, all such evidence presented shall be retained as part of the record for the hearing. Now, the examples that I wanted to provide in the minutes that we're currently looking at is on page 9 of the minutes. You'll see in the upper third, there's a statement that says, Mayor Hobart read a statement to the executive committee. The document does not reflect the evidence presented, that is, the content of what I read. So we cannot, if my grounds for statements are not presented, we just know that Hobart read a statement to the executive committee. We do not know if Hobart supported something, advocated something, or opposed something. And this is a violation of our own rules and procedures. The example that I can give you that requires another, on page 6, the next to last paragraph, under the discussion action item that was referring to the Board of Supervisors having five votes. It says Mayor Pro Tem Ted Weil made comments related to the Riverside County Board of Supervisors. If you read that entire paragraph, the series of paragraphs under 7A, you will not have the slightest idea what the subjects were that were raised at the meeting concerning the five votes. I raised the subject in disagreement or disharmony with the idea of there being nine cities that have votes, one each, and the Board of Supervisors had five votes. You would not know that by reading these minutes because the evidence that was presented is omitted in violation of our own rules of procedure. And so what I would ask with respect to these minutes on the two items that I identified, that that portion of the minutes not be voted on for approval until after they have been amended by staff to report at least enough to know what the subject matters were of the two issues. And that's what we have to do on everything that we put in the minutes. We have to know what the committee, the executive committee, discussed. That is the point I'd like to make with respect to that, Mr. Chairman. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Is there approval of amendments?
Second.
May I, just a clarification, there is audio of all of these, isn't there?
Yes, there is.
Okay, my second stance.
Well, point of order, audio is not reporting it out.
It was just a question.
Okay. I'm assuming, and let me ask, the motion to approve the minutes is with the exception of the two points I made that will be returned for further clarification. If that's the case, I support that.
I've made a motion to approve the minutes as written.
Well, it's in violation of the rules, I would think. I would move to amend the motion to withdraw those two sections that I identified so they can be reviewed by staff and the subject matters identified.
Quick question then as well to go further on that. Every time it states that they presented the staff report, should it then reprint the staff report that was in the agenda? Because it's just showing that they have presented the staff report, but it's not including, similar to the comments or the memos. So for consistency,
obvious, no answer.
They do not need to include the staff report.
The staff report is already available anyway.
Perhaps so we can move this forward. What we could do if the motion passes, what we could do as staff is ask Tony to give an analysis of our minutes and whether we are in full compliance. I think what you started with is a concern that all the members' votes weren't properly reported.
Well, there were those are separate issues.
That appears, I think we are doing that, recording everybody's votes on every item.
Well, so we didn't on the last vote.
There was nobody. So that will
make sense. No, I understand. I didn't raise the issue then because I don't want to be picky
if the minutes pass as written, what we could do is bring back for an information item how we do our minutes and whether they are in compliance with the latest rules.
Well, what are we going to do with respect to the two items?
It's not for me to decide. It's for the committee.
We have an amended motion. Do we have a second to this amendment?
You second.
His amendment.
No.
Okay, we need a second on his amendment.
I'll second.
Okay, now let's take a vote on that. I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman.
That's fine. Thank you for the clarification. We'll do a roll call vote.
Like?
This is for the amendment.
This is just to withdraw those two votes.
I'm going to abstain because I wasn't here last meeting, so.
Should it be in the city?
No.
Coachella?
No.
Desert Hot Springs?
No.
Indian Wells?
Yes.
Indio?
Stay.
La Quinta?
Yes.
On the amended motion?
Sure.
Palm Desert?
No.
Palm Springs?
Aye.
Rancho Mirage?
Yes.
Riverside County 4th District?
Yes.
Riverside County 5th District?
No.
If the vote is tied, so the motion fails.
So we have a motion and a second for the approval of the minutes as they stand. We'll do a roll call vote.
Blythe?
Staying again.
Cathedral City?
Yes.
Coachella?
Yes.
Desert Hot Springs?
Yes.
Indian Wells?
No.
Indio?
Staying.
La Quinta?
Yes.
Palm Desert?
Yes.
Palm Springs?
Aye.
Rancho Mirage?
No.
Riverside County 4th District?
Yes.
Riverside County 5th District?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you, and I will ask that as a staff item that we do a clarification about what our policies are regards to minutes.
We'll take care of it.
We'll put that on the next agenda.
Thank you. Moving to 7A, amendment to number 3 to the agreement of Avenue 66 grade separation project. Mr. Wood.
Good evening. So what's before you on the screen is accomplishments that I think that the Coachella Valley Association of Government and all of its member agencies should be extremely proud of. There are a total of 5 grade separation projects in the Coachella Valley. 3 of those grade separation projects are completed, 48, 50, and we just had ribbon cutting, which you heard, for Avenue 52. What's before you today is an additional funding for Avenue 66. Grade separation, which is in the lower right of the screen above you, in front of you. Oops, so the question is, why are grade separations a big thing for the Coachella Valley? Well, there's a variety of ills that come when you have to wait for the train to cross and the car is stopped. Drivers become extremely frustrated. Productivity can decrease for the valley. Local commerce can suffer. Air quality can increase with idling cars. And the accidents can happen. We've seen some of those accidents and some of the solutions to some of those accidents. And we just had the Avenue 52 grade crossing ribbon cutting. What's before you is Avenue 66, and I put a quick little picture of it to show you where it is regionally within the region of the Coachella Valley. And the next one is a close-up of what the actual configuration of that will look like. And there is a rendering of the overall, when it's completed, what it will look here. Obligations that CBAG has given to date has been $3,225,000 for this project. The first, it's been for both the design and for right-of-way acquisition and utility. The estimated overall cost for this project is over $39 million. The balance for the local match and the balance that we have yet to fund is $12,496,556. What we're here for you today is out of that is to provide Coachella Valley Association of Governments to provide a share of $9,372,417 above and beyond what we've given so far, and then the county share is just over $3 million of that as well. The reason we're before you today is there's a tight schedule. In order for us to qualify this funding, we must be under construction by December 31st, and we want to get this to the CDC by February of this year. And with that, I'll close. Thank you.
Just a point of clarification, it's December 31st, 2016, and it's February of next year.
That's right. Thank you.
Thank you.
I don't think she almost can go that fast. Any questions of the executive board?
Can I comment?
Absolutely.
You know, this is an important project for the East Valley. We let $10 million in this project to Coachella to get the other project rolling. Glad we did that. That met their time deadlines. Some folks down in the East Valley were a little concerned with me doing that. We as a group approved immediately to start planning the process by putting some money up front. That was done. It was effective. It was a good place to move forward now. And frankly, I'm much surprised that it's only taken 3 years. I thought maybe 5 to 10 once we made that move. And I appreciate the staff's work to try and bring it back this quickly and be in a position to have this work. And I know it will approve.
Is there a second?
Second.
We'll have a roll call vote, please.
Light?
Yes.
Cathedral City?
Yes.
Coachella?
Yes.
Desert Hot Springs?
Aye.
Indian Wells?
Yes.
Indio?
Aye.
Ita?
Aye.
Home Desert?
Aye.
Palm Springs?
Aye.
Rancho Mirage?
Yes.
Riverside County 4th District?
Aye.
Riverside County 5th District?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Thank you very much. Good luck.
And I regret that the people who are very concerned about that also need me in their parade in a few minutes. I have to look at their leaders.
So we're moving item C forward before B, because B is an informational item. Mayor Peabody's request regarding votes on CD Link.
Good evening, Chairman and members of the Executive Committee. This item is being brought forward at the request of Indianapolis Mayor Ted Peabody. As you see in your packet, his letter asked the Executive Committee to consider a motion that essentially requests nine of our cities to hold an advisory vote within the next 6 months that would ask voters whether they would support or oppose the funding of CityLink. Staff is presenting this motion with no recommendation other than discussion. Based on the mayor's timeline and of his request, it's also being presented directly to the committee without the typical review of our CBAC policy committees and without any input from our technical advisory committee. Now, as background, there's never been a vote on a specific project in CBAC's 40-plus year history. We also have no knowledge of a project-specific vote by members of RCTC or by the other transportation agencies throughout the state. CBAC for decades has relied on guidance from the leaders like you, who were elected by the people to make the decisions that will benefit the entire community. We also rely on the guidance that Riverside County voters have provided twice with the passage of Measure A. Now, in recent months, two cities have considered the idea of putting CB Link before the voters. In October, the Rancho Mirage City Council unanimously voted to put five CB Link-related measures on the city's April ballot. The ballot measures are advisory in nature, meaning they do not supersede policy decisions that are made by the City Council, by CBAG, or by other governing agencies. These measures were crafted without any input from CBAG. The Council decided to seek the voter input after spending months expressing concerns about the funding of CityLink and after they had taken votes to oppose CityLink routes through the city. Indian Wells also discussed a possible ballot measure for CityLink. The November 19th discussion was designed to discuss what they called the preferred method to gain public input on CityLink. During the meeting, several council members expressed concern that it was premature to support a ballot measure before the environmental review process was complete, which will not be done until the end of 2016. So instead of a ballot measure, the Indian Wells City Council unanimously voted to have the city staff craft questions that could be used in the city's virtual town hall survey, which they use for other issues like vacation rental ordinances. City officials have said the questions would be broad and would gauge how much residents know about CityLink. As you consider Mayor Peabody's motion, there are some issues to keep in mind. First, advisory ballot measures do not supersede policy decisions, and it could establish an unintended precedent for our future projects. A vote by the CBAG Executive Committee does not compel each city council to place the measure on the ballot, nor can it compel the city to pay for such an advisory measure. That power lies with the city council. Even if your city council has decided that an advisory measure should be placed on the ballot, the CBAG Executive Committee cannot compel each council to include this wording that was proposed by Mayor Peabody. The wording of such measures will most certainly influence the results. And since there's no guarantee that there would be any consistency in the wording used by each city, assuming all cities even move forward with the motion, it would be difficult for CBAG and its member agencies to interpret any results. A city-by-city vote also provides limited feedback because it does not capture the input from residents who live in the unincorporated areas. It would not include any input from the part-time residents who are not registered to vote here or from the visitors who come to the Coachella Valley and are likely to use CityLink. As part of the committee's consideration, you should know that CBAG anticipates no cost to us because as any cost would be covered by your cities, and that would include the printing of the ballots. According to the Riverside County Registrar of Voters, it costs about 60 cents per voter to put something on the consolidated general election that's held in November. Mayor Peabody's suggested motion specified holding a vote within 6 months, which would mean cities would need to put a ballot measure on the June primary ballot, or they would hold a special election. According to the Registrar's Office, the estimated cost for these options can range anywhere from 75 cents per voter to $3 per voter. The CBAG boundaries generally mirror Riverside County's 4th District. And as of November 17th, more than 164,000 voters were residing in the 4th District. Using the registrar's estimated costs, the cost of putting a ballot before all of these voters would range from $98,448 to $492,240. And putting multiple ballot measures before voters, similar to what Rancho Mirage is doing for the April 2016 election, would increase the costs. There also would be additional costs as part of any informational campaigns like the one we are seeing in Rancho Mirage. Such campaigns generally involve mailers and websites. Now, several cities have undertaken educational campaigns in recent years for various measures. And to give you an example of the cost, at least two of them budgeted $50,000 each for those campaigns. As mentioned, staff is recommending a discussion, and I'm happy to address any questions.
Thank you. Mayor Peabody, do you have any comments?
Yes, I do. First of all, just to correct what was just said, we have not made a decision to put it on the ballot in November. We'll make that decision at a later date. So that has not been decided at this point. I'd like to preface my comments by saying it's unfortunate that we have the police here tonight, that this thing has become everybody accusing everybody of something. It's become arrows shot across the bridge. It's become letters and emails sent out by people from this committee that attack people for no reason. You have never seen me write a thing about this CB link. My discussions have either been in here or they have been at the city council. And I think it's very unfortunate. This is a business decision. This is a decision what's good for every city in this valley. It's not personal. Saying that Indian Wells and Rancho Mirage are irrelevant is an absolutely unnecessary statement to be put out to the public and put out in an email. We're not irrelevant. We're just as important. We have just the same amount of votes as everybody else in this room. The other thing that bothers me about this is I gave 25 questions to CVAG in September. They were all financial questions. None of you have those answers at this point, and I don't have those answers at this point. So how can you make a decision on this issue unless those questions are answered? We had a bulletin this week that showed $668,000 for O&M costs. There are over 25 items that I've given them to you all that aren't even included in that O&M cost. So are you going to sit and believe that that's going to be the final cost? Because if you are, you're kidding yourself. The reason that I brought this up today is there have been two public votes on Measure A, 1988 and 2002, to approve it. Now, if there's an attempt to use Measure A funds for this, don't you think the public has a right? My next question to you is, doesn't Indian Wells or Rancho Mirage or Palm Desert have the right to discuss and vote on general funds? Don't they have the right to vote on Measure A? And don't they have the right to vote on the route? You all are aware that Indian Wells only has two possible routes. One, we've had two ballot measures on, and both of them have been over 80% to not touch Highway 111 anymore. The other choice is the golf course, a $97 million project that generates $14 million in revenue, and you want to put it up 30 feet against the golf course and take all of the value of the golf course away. That's why we voted what we did. But I don't think it's necessary to be putting people down because they don't agree. My reasons for not agreeing and our council's reasons for not agreeing are very simple. I don't know about you, but our general fund can't be squeezed anymore. And we don't agree with Measure A. That's our reasons. You don't have to agree. But to send out emails and to send out things like this are absolutely unnecessary. It's not personal. It's business, and it's what's good for your community. The reason I brought this motion up is that I've been reading the Business Sun a lot in the Voice. I've had tons of comments from our residents and residents from other cities. They want to say, They have a right to a say. Yes, we were elected to this committee. Yes, we were elected to make decisions. But this is a huge decision. It's not a $110 million decision. This project will cost $130 plus by the time you finish. And everybody can deny that, but that's okay. But show me a project anywhere in this country that's coming on budget. Not many. So my concern is we're denying the public the opportunity. You're not allowing your residents to have a say in this. Very few cities have had even a meeting with their residents. One person, one councilman says, well, our people all approve it. Well, I've talked to two council people from that city, and they haven't approved it. So to not allow the public, whether it's 6 months or when you finish the environmental study, the public has a right to have a say in this project. Whether the bylaws say that, whatever. We're willing to spend $2,500 for a ballot in our city. We're not asking Riverside County to pay anything. What we're asking in this measure is for each city to take into consideration their residents' opinion and to give them an opportunity to have a say and not try to shut them out because you're elected and I'm elected so I can make the decision for them. So that's why I made that motion, and that's what the motion is, and that's my motion.
No, sir, there's a motion.
Is there a motion?
The motion was put into the package. The motion is in your package.
I think we're, unless you want to not let these people have a say.
Everybody should have a say.
We're up and back to a point to have a motion.
Okay.
Because we're still in some discussion.
Just read it in if there was a say.
You want me to read the motion in?
Certainly.
That the CVAG Executive Committee hereby requests that each of the 9 Coachella Valley Associations of Government Cities conduct an advisory vote within 6 months, and that could be changed, of their voting public as to the following. Does name of the city support or oppose the expenditure of approximately $100 million for monies raised by grants and Measure A funds for the construction of a bicycle, electric vehicle, walking, jogging path extending for about 50 miles from Palm Springs to the city of Coachella, with a further understanding that the annual operations maintenance expenses projected to increase by 2% annually of the project will be shared responsibility of each of the 9 cities plus the county for the anticipated 75 years of the CP link.
Second motion, Rash
Marash.
We have public.
And I would like a roll call when you do it, please.
Absolutely. We have some public comments. Ted Wild.
Good afternoon. Mayor Henry and members of the Executive Committee. My name is Ted Weil. I'm the Mayor Pro Tem of the City of Rancho Mirage. Mayor Peabody has asked the Executive Committee to request an advisory vote of the member cities, excluding Blythe, regarding various aspects of the CV link. The staff report is the antithesis of fair and balanced and describes all of the reasons why an advisory vote is wrong. One cannot help but draw the conclusion that by silencing the voting public, CVAG avoids the fear of defeat. That assumption is absolutely correct. In its present form, the CV link would likely be defeated at the ballot box, as the majority of residents do not want a 30-foot concrete roadway and the associated undetermined cost imposed upon their city. However, there is a way to get unanimous approval from every city and avoid the accusation of deception, avoid unprofessional personal attacks, and restore a cooperative working environment. Return to the original intention of the CV link, a bicycle and jogging path and trail, and eliminate the use of NEV electric vehicles and the construction of a roadway. Convenient and comfortable routes would flow through every city. Measure A funds can be used for its intended purpose, the repair of the county roads, Riverside being the 14th worst in the country. The staff report says there has never been a vote of a specific project. The vote in 1988 and 2002 of Measure A was specific as to its intent and is now being misdirected. I was personally very excited about the original concept until the details were revealed. Like many others I have talked to, let us return to this exciting concept that we can all be proud of and that goes through our city and county. Return to the original concept and have something that we can all herald. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Brian Forsnoy?
Forsnoy.
Sorry.
My name is Brian Torsney. I'm a resident of Palm Desert. I have read both the staff report and Mayor Peabody's letter to Mr. Kirk. I agree with the staff report that CBAG and the executive committee has no authority to place an item on the ballot. The staff report somewhat carefully avoids addressing the fact that this executive committee could recommend to their governing bodies that the items requested by Mayor Peabody be placed on a ballot for their particular jurisdiction. All the objections to the proposed election in the staff report, items 1 through 5, and the financial analysis are pure puffery. Objection 6, however, rather than being a reason to reject Mayor Peabody's request, adds to the necessity of granting Mayor Peabody's request. The staff report gratuitously states that it has helped every city in the Coachella Valley and that in its 42-year history has never been subjected to a vote of the electorate for any of their projects. I submit that the CV Link is important enough to be the first such election. I also need to make it clear that the projects are not only CDAG projects, but they are the projects of the voters and the residents who actually pay for those projects. The financial analysis is minuscule when compared to the construction cost, the long-term operation cost, the maintenance cost, and the other ancillary costs, not even counting lawsuits. The people have the right to vote on the proposal of this matter. The footnote to the staff report is equally ingenuous. The inclusion of golf carts as a user of the CV Link clearly indicates that CVAG intends to use major A funds to build and construct the link. Thank you.
Thank you. Bob Terry?
He didn't speak early on. Oh, there he is.
You get 2 shots at the app.
Excuse me?
I was just a smart ass call.
Yes, I want to address the amount of funding it would take to do these votes. What was that number? 60 cents per voter, then it was a 75 cent to $3 per voter. I just did some rough numbers on the 164,000 voters and the projected cost of CV Link, and it comes to almost exactly $6,700 per voter. So I think maybe 75 cents at $3 might be worth it to the voters, if they're voting on something that essentially costs them $6,700. Further, I believe that the voters deserve to vote on such a big issue. And the overall feeling I'm getting from this body is that this is all free money. This is coming from somewhere else. Or at least I get that from some of the writers into the newspaper. It's not free money. This is paid for from tax dollars, or it's paid for from mitigation funds It should not be used for a bike path. And I do think we should, as it was suggested earlier, maybe go back to the idea of a bike path and get away from this electric or motorized vehicles. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there a Hagerman?
Yeah, this is really a simple issue. You absolutely take this to the voters, and here's why. The CV Link is unlike any other project this valley or this body has ever seen before. In the promotion of this project, it's touted as the first of its kind in the nation. It's requiring CBAG to change the rules for the use of Measure A in the TIPS list to even allow this thing to get onto the list. There are major policy decisions that are being required as a result of this project that are going to take regional funding sources that could go for a whole multitude of projects. You absolutely take this project back to the voters. At a 10% design level, this project is $100 million to build. At 10% design and section one of it, which is just Palm Springs and Coachella. So what public project do you know that is 10% design that does not increase in cost over time? The other issue that I think that makes this project unique is the massive O&M responsibilities that come along with it. Somewhere between $1 million and $1.6 million if you use the March Master Plan. That is a huge financial commitment, and voters deserve a say on this. And I think it would go a long way for the conversation in the CV Link with all the drama surrounding it if this body came out and said that they intended to request each city to take this to their voters. I think that would help the conversation of the CV Link a lot. And since there was an issue raised in the staff report specifically about the Rancho Mirage ballot measures, the City Council will be reviewing the wording of the ballot measures prior to us submitting them to the Riverside County Voter Registrar's Office, just to make sure they're accurate. So, Tom, if you have any comments you would like to provide us, please feel free to email me. Thank you.
Thank you. Zawiel Avila.
Evening, Ms. Ariel Avila. I would like to express my support for Mayor Peabody's attempt, whether it happens or not, but it's the attempt to engage the public. Riverside, I found out Riverside County for the first time in the history has done an HIA. Someone in Riverside County educated me that an HIA is a health impact assessment. It's an emerging tool in California, mostly up in the Bay Area. So they thought it was a good idea that because this project is so big, like they said, I heard it was the biggest project of its kind in the nation. So why isn't more people know about it? That's my question. And so the HIA process is not a legal requirement, but I do appreciate that Riverside County, I guess, encouraged it, and they followed through with it. So I would encourage all of the cities to read the HIA. It is on healthyriversidecounty.org. Indio, it's very interesting information for Indio. It is not a legal requirement, but the environmental study, I'm told, will look at the air quality of this report because that's the only thing that's relevant. So in my experience of going to all these workshops, basically my input, my time, it's irrelevant because that study is not a legal obligation, so you see that probably won't even put it on your website. So that's my experience, is that the public is not really engaged. And so I would like to show my support, whether it happens or not, just engaging the public more. Thank you.
Thank you. There are no other public comments. Are there any comments from the or questions of staff from the table? Yes, sir.
It seems to me that the argument that is being advanced, excuse me, by CBAG is that since we've never done it before, that is, turned over a project and sought a public vote, since we've never done it before, we just can't do it. Then the other issue that they put into the pie is the issue of cost. Now, I recognize that Rancho Mirage is going to cost less than other cities, but in Rancho Mirage, our clerk estimates, based on conversations that she's had with the county clerk, I think, that it will cost us somewhere between $25,000 and $35,000 to hold an election. I'm not sure if it will cost that extra because our election will be in conjunction with the regular election. But it's not a lot of money, but I do know of a source where we could raise $150,000 and help the cities pay for it, and that is by changing the outrageous decision that CBAG made to go forward with an EIR study in Rancho Mirage on roads that we have voted unanimously saying are not available to CBAG's CV link. That $150,000 could be spread out to help particular cities that might be otherwise unable to expend enough money to conduct a public public vote. I think that's an important thing from a financial point of view, but holding a vote on something that is as unique, and as Mr. Hagerman said, this is advertised by CBAG as being the first of its kind in America. There is a lot about this that says the public should be able to get a word in or two with respect to whether we're going to go forward with a project that has such an enormous cost, regardless of how that money is being raised, and has an extremely high burden of ongoing payments in the form of operations and maintenance to the cities. The cities have to carry this burden for the project that has a projected life of 75 years. That's going to be a lot of monthly O&M the cities are going to have to pay. And cities have a right to decide, are they going to pay it? It seems incongruous to me that CBAG has the ability, much less the audacity, to tell cities that we are forcing this on you and you will maintain it without giving them a word in it. Where did they get this authority? I want to mention that again in a moment. But there is a statement. Some of you make frequent references to the Brown Act, particularly in reference to my sending out documents. I assume that somebody here has already talked to the district attorney's office, has talked to the district attorney's office, and you know that I'm not violating the Brown Act with anything that I've done. And I knew it, and I told you from the beginning. But there is something in the Brown Act, in the first section of the Brown Act, that perhaps we should all take to heart. Let me read it to you. The people of this state do not yield their sovereignty to the agencies which serve them. The people, in delegating authority, do not give their public servants the right to decide what is good for the people to know and what is not good for them to know. The people insist on remaining informed so they may retain control over the instruments they have created. The instruments that created this organization are somewhat bizarre. I personally question whether this organization has the authority to force this project onto the cities. I doubt, from a legal perspective, I doubt, but I could be wrong, and that's why I'm not saying I'm positive, but I doubt that there is authority for this unilateral action. Under what authority does CBAG tell cities that what they need and what they must accept as it relates to the CV link? What is the authority that we have? I would ask that we have our attorney send us a note that tells us all what the legal authority that CBAG has to compel the cities that created CBAG that they have to pay for whatever the O&M costs are of a project And they're saying, we don't even have to determine what the O&M costs are going to be since it's so far down the line. We have at least a couple of years to do it, which means a couple of years to spend more money advancing the project into the EIR, the engineering, the design, and all of that. It would be important, because if somebody challenges the authority, which they could easily do, and if they win, they get attorney's fees too, I might add. But if they do challenge the authority, and it turns out that the cities have not delegated this authority to CMAG, we will have wasted a whole lot of money by the time that decision comes out and is concluded, probably on appeal. So I would suggest, A, we vote for the motion. That'll give us some time, slow things down, and let the people speak as to what debts they want to incur for themselves. And B, give our legal people, remember, we did ask at one point, Rancho Ranch asked at one point, let's hire an independent outside law firm, downtown LA type, downtown Santa Ana or somewhere, to give us an unbiased opinion. We don't have that. We have two separate opinions, written by attorneys who were hired on all sides, written by the attorney for CVAG and RCTC, one written by the attorney for Rancho Mirage.
I beg your pardon, I did not write that opinion.
Well, it was, you don't have to beg my pardon, I'll explain what I said. When I said, I did not mean you, I'm sorry if you took it that way, I was referring to Best, Best, and Krieger, who are retained by CVAG and retained by RCTC. There are the attorneys representing both organizations in various things. And I apologize for implying.
I'm sorry, I just didn't want...
Yeah, no, I don't blame you.
I haven't taken a position, please.
Smart girl. At any rate, it would not... It may be unprecedented to hold a vote. I know that people have said, well, we don't look how much money we spent on the Jefferson Overpass, the interchange. I forgot the numbers, it's 17 million or something, whatever the number was. But there was a vote on the Jefferson Overpass. There was a vote. And that was in 2008, when the voters of Riverside County authorized Measure A, saying that if the project is for the repair of roads and highways for public safety, if that's what the project is for, you have carte blanche authority as long as you get the authority from CVAG. And so if anybody says they didn't get authority from the public, they're wrong. They're just playing word games. So I suggest that this organization do something that is unexpected, but support the motion. Let's determine the authority of moving forward. It's very important from a legal perspective. And then let the chips fall where they may. If the public votes to have a CV link, if Rancho Mirage could find a route to satisfy it and CVAG, we'd be part of it, as we've always said we would be. But anyway, I thank you for listening. And this is an opportunity for us to fool abundance and do the right thing.
Thank you. Before calling for the motion, I do want to give a reason why I am voting a certain way. I do agree, and first of all, I apologize if you think that any of this was taken personally for the reasons why the sheriff's deputies are here. It's not because of any of the members here.
No, I didn't think
that. Okay, I just want to make sure you
know. I hope not.
I think that, you know, city councils and the cities individually do have the right to set their own budgets, do funding, all of those things that you've talked about, and at times CBAF probably should not be telling them what to do. And that's why I agree that CBAF should not be telling the cities to hold an advisory vote. If we're talking about some type of a, and I believe that the input of the people is obviously necessary, and we should be looking for that. A vote is not the way at this time to do it. I think Indian Wells are looking at doing a survey. I think that would be a great alternative to looking, because we can also include others that would be paying for this, as far as visitors and other people that may be coming to Coachella Valley, that through some of the taxes or through other means would be paying for the use of Stevie Lake. So I just wanted to clarify why I would be voting a certain way. Yes.
If I could briefly, just a point of clarification. The discussion that has ensued talks about the intent of Measure A. The intent of Measure A and what the authors of the measure, going back to 2002, had when crafting the ballot language would be the intent of Measure A. There happens to be, I know myself, and I believe Greg Pettis sat on that ad hoc committee back in 2002, that crafted the language for the reauthorization of Measure A. We know the legislative intent of what was proposed in our language moving forward with the reauthorization of only voters. Now, there's been comments about, we know the intent of the voters was, well, how do we know the intent of the voters? Have we talked to the voters and personally asked them what their intent was when they voted for Measure A, number one? And number two, have we gone back and pulled the record of the ad hoc committee and asked the ad hoc committee members, what was your intent, legislative intent, of the language in the measure? Our CTC is part of the Coachella Valley's portion of the Reauthorization Act, handed that off to CBAG to craft that language, and that language was molded in the overall measure for Riverside County. Why is Best Bets and Krieger important into this matter? Because they finalized the ballot language. So you have the legislative authors, the legislative intent, and the author of the on the legal side of writing the reauthorization in 2002. The committee recognized that the original Measure A was very narrowly written and very black and white as to monies that could be spent and how they were to be spent in our neck of the woods for the Coachella Valley and CBAG. That language hurt us as the years went by and new ways of doing things or new forms of transportation developed and came to be. It precluded us from growing or looking at new things and utilizing the finances to fund those projects. So when we crafted the language for the 2002 measure, we purposely wrote loose language, if you want to call it gray area or what have you. The legislative intent of the CBAG portion of Measure A was to give us leeway as to spending money and taxpayer dollars on transportation, future transportation, and the mechanisms, different mechanisms of transportation. Great, Mr. Pettis just earlier talked about the release of the draft RTP SCS. Well, did you know as far as part of the regional transportation program that you're required under the sustainability portion to fund active transportation projects if you want transportation dollars in your communities? It's becoming a requirement. So I would encourage each and every one of you, number one, to read the full RTP and understand how the game is played in getting transportation dollars in this day and age, and understand that in order to do so, you're going to have to engage in active transportation projects. And secondly, if there's anybody that knew the intent of the language of the 2002 ballot, there's two of them here, one's left, I'm the other one. Dick Kelly was on that ad hoc. I believe the late Roy Wilson was on that ad hoc. And I believe the late, or not late, but excuse me, Percy Byrd was on that ad hoc. I've asked Tom to dig into the paperwork to see if we can come up with some of those documents, but I just wanted to clarify the record that if anybody knows the intent, it was
good. Mr. Chairman, I've got to piggyback on the statements about Measure A. It's been repeated that Measure A is for repairing roadways, and that is certainly a big part of Measure A. Measure A also funds Sunline Transit. It also funds rail service in Western Riverside County. It also funded projects that did not involve a repair of a roadway in our cities, new projects. Just to clarify, CV Link does not require any change of rules. It qualifies according to RCTC's legal counsel, not CVAC's. We've been down this road before, and we've had a legal opinion, and we may not even use Measure A, by the way. You took an action in April 2014 saying up to $20 million of local funding could be spent on CV Link. It could be Measure A. What CVAC does, as well as RCTC, is we prefer not to use our local money, and we try to get state and federal grants. We're currently using Measure A or local funds as a match, and hopefully don't use it. We bring in federal and state dollars. There tend to be more and more active transportation dollars that we hope to access.
Karen, next. Ready? Nobody next. Sure.
Thank you. I know I'm a new kid on the block here, but just qualify some of my comments here. I've been an RCTC since 2008. I've been a council member for 8.5 years, and I've read the reports. I've watched what's gone on here. And I've listened and I've read all the emails that have been coming out from different parts of this body, so I'm well-versed in it. I do have a couple concerns, though. I don't believe this body can supersede how we as a city council dictate to come represent ourselves here. So I understand the word is request, but what would the consequences be if this body took a vote and it didn't happen within the cities? Second, we're unique. As a city desert hot springs, we're technically not in the CV Link yet until we find funding for our link to be linked to the rest of the valley.
It's a lot of things.
And then the cost. We're a city that's financially struggling, and on the general ballot, it's $5,000. If we do a special election, it could be upwards of $10,000 for us. So we have some issues that need to be answered there. I like to be a transparent mayor. I like to make sure that my city understands everything. We had a vote made here many years ago on the MSACP without the consensus of the city council, and he made it basically on his own motion. So I would first have to take this back to my city council and talk to him before I even entertained this motion. I would have to vote no or abstain at this point. And again, I would really like for the body here to figure out what the consequences are if we do decide not to do this. Thank you very much.
Tom?
I've listened to many of the statements made, and they are fraught with absolutes and assumptions. Nobody in our town wants them. And I'm hearing these absolutes. And you're right, Mayor Peabody. It has been made personal, and there's been some very ugly statements, and it's unfortunate, and that's not what we're here to do. What I'm looking at is something we're saying. I read this proposed measure for advising this, and it's kind of one-sided. And it's kind of, what is it, a push-pull? It's, you know, when did you quit beating your wife kind of a statement. And I think we have to remember, and although I appreciate Mr. Luders and Mr. Rothblatt getting up and speaking and saying they love to bicycle. I get it. I appreciate it. But it's not only for our residents that this will be built. This is for tourism as well. And I would ask that the staff look at other similar projects, because I'm going to go back just a little. I look at this as an investment in our community. We are dependent on tourist dollars. We are dependent on TOT and on sales tax revenue. And this is something that does attract tourists, and it attracts tourists not only across our country, but internationally. So I think it would really benefit us to go look at other similar projects that have been built in this nation and ask them how they've gone to get public input. For us to just say to voters, well, you know what, the voters don't support this really outstanding way of life we all enjoy. Our 5-month residents really help us in our economy. And I think it would be a good idea to, as you said, you wanted to do the virtual town hall. I think we need to explore a way that we get input from our visitors, even if they're just a couple nights in your hotel, or if it's the people who stay in their second or third home for 5 months. Those are important people, and they are an extremely important part of our revenue and our budgets. So before we just go to that very narrow margin that may skew one way or another, we need to look at the bigger picture. And I would ask that the staff perhaps go to other areas where they have similar projects and find out how they've gone about it getting public input. It's important to get public input. I'm sure there's not one person in here who would argue with that. So let's find the best way to do it. And it's not by a simple ballot with really, which is about a third of the people who are here, that, or a third of the people are here year-round, and we want the people also who are here for 3 days, 3 months, and who fill our coffers. So I ask the staff if it's possible, can we explore a way to get full input?
Yeah. Good.
Thank you. And being new on Mayor Mattis, I've been invested in this, and I've been watching from far, listening back to emails the same way. And it's very difficult to infringe upon the rights of two other cities. I feel they have valid measures in it. At the same time, this is a regional board that's trying to make regional city for the community as a whole. As Mr. Mattis stated, I also would have to, I think, go back before we make some kind of vote like this, because obviously Councilman Wilson has a different idea. There are questions on routes, how it's going to be paid for. None of that's been brought forward because we haven't finished the EIR and finished the other stuff. So it's really difficult to vote on something you don't have in front of you and how it's going to affect it. The city of Indian Wells was just hit with a $6.5 million lawsuit for not closing a bicycle lane or whatever it was. There's concerns that I have for not only the spur itself, $100 million we spent on that, but the routes to get into those spurs. How is the city of India going to be able to pay for those, look for funding for that over the long haul, and make sure the people that are utilizing our streets are utilizing going from the polo clubs to the route behind, the city links behind the Desert Sand Dunes School District. How do I get them safe without utilizing an issue where I put my either resident or guest in position? So there's a lot of unanswered questions I think that we've done. So I feel very determined to make sure that those are answered before we make a serious vote on this. But I can understand Mayor Peabody's and Mayor Hobart's decision, what they feel is best for their city. How do we blend those together, like Jan Harnick said, to make sure that we make that decision, but also don't spend as much dollars as we can as we try and come up with that solution that will fulfill everybody's need and obligation. Can we skip the electric cars through Ranch Mirage and Indian Wells? I mean, there's got to be a way that we can work together. I hate to see this group divided because we come together on so many other issues, and I think we need to come together with an issue that's going to bring us forward to make sure that we get one idea and one goal. There are some questions that need to be answered. Thank you,
Mr. Mills.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I certainly agree with what you said, Mr. Chair, about the vote, and the vote in my mind is up to each city. I also agree that there's a bigger picture and a bigger understanding than just the citizens. It's a very important project to the number one industry in this valley, and that being the tourism, but also I think I want my citizens and the citizens of the city of Palm Springs, and I hope you as well, that if they vote or when they vote, it to be an educated vote and not an emotional vote. And right now, it's an emotional vote. With what you read in the paper, how you feel this, how you feel about that. I think it's important that the voter have all the information, and the only way I see that coming forth is through the environmental process. And then the comments can be made on the route, the comments can be made on the economics, on the effect of tourism, on everything. That's so when and if that vote does happen, and I certainly hope in our city that it is a vote, that it's an educated one. And as I mentioned, to get to that point, you have to do the environmental work in my mind.
Thank you. Any other comments? I'm sorry.
That's like the sixth time you've done that. I should call you lieutenant.
I don't know why I do it.
Just a couple of things. Being the only city that doesn't have the tourism angle, because but if y'all could help, I'd appreciate that. You know, we look at this in a couple of different ways. We always look at it from our demographics, health, and I think you hit the nail on the head, Chris, that we really do need to look at the impact. And I think we also need to continue to educate ourselves. To the young lady in the room who pointed out the health, what's it called? Health impact assessment. Well, I got to say, after reading that, I'm just kind of glancing through it right now, the outcomes of the CV link are not good for Coachella. It points out that access to the CV link for the city of Coachella are going to be difficult for some of our residents, and there's some strong recommendations on improving connectivity to it. So I'd like to talk about that. But I think as we debate this, I would also add that what else do we include in this public conversation? CV Link is one thing that we should get public input on, but what about affordable housing? Why can't we get input on affordable housing? And certainly when you look at the mismatch of affordable housing and where it's located, there's a lot to be said about limiting the public conversation on just the CV Link. So I guess my point is just, where do we end? Or what else should be included? Or what else should have public input? Because they're all very important issues.
One more thing. And certainly there's nothing that would prohibit you from having those discussions in your community at any time and having open and public discussions. But I just want to go back to one quick thing. Several council members, and this is speaking of the Indian Wells member meeting, several council members expressed concern that it was premature to support a ballot measure before the environmental review process is completed. I think the whole thing is premature. We do need the EIR, we need the results of that, and we need to explore other possibilities of finding the best way to get public input. So I would suggest that we, in fact, I'll make a motion that we...
There's a motion on the table.
Substitute motion, I'm sorry. Okay. That we... continue the discussion after we have the results of the EIR and the staff report, finding better ways to explore and gain public input. And that's my substitute motion.
Second that.
Point of information, isn't that a motion to continue the matter until a certain time, a certain date?
No, I didn't give a date certain. What I did ask is for the EIR and for staff to come back, so I have not asked for a date certain.
Discussion.
After your EIR is certified.
And then we have staff reports on better ways to gain public input.
I have to tell you that what bothers me, and this is exactly why I did this, it appears to me that in most instances there are people that just don't want the public's input. And this is an advisory request. It doesn't say you have to do it in your city. It's saying, let's ask the CBAG group to ask the cities to let the public have a say in this project. How you can have an objection to that, whether you do it today or you do it 6 months from now, is beyond my imagination, other than you don't want the public to have input. That's the only way I can conclude when you're saying you can. It's an advisory request to basically ask the cities to consider getting the public involved, either doing a ballot, do a survey, whatever, but give the public the opportunity. Why are we denying the public that opportunity? And if that's your motion,
Chip, tomorrow.
You can do that right now.
Anybody said you can do that right now.
Yeah, and I'm just asking to explore ways to do it in the best way. Your own city said, no, it's premature. I agree, it is premature.
That isn't exactly what we said, I hate to tell you. We decided we would look at doing the ballot in November. We were just putting it off to do the survey, conceivably first. We don't even know if we're going to do a survey.
And that's fine. And all I'm asking is that we get the best information possible in the best way to get public feedback.
Try to bring this all back to around and move forward, right?
Okay.
We have a motion and a second, substantive motion. So we take a roll call vote on that, please.
So which motion is this? The one that you seconded. So it's a non motion.
Harnick's motion.
Blythe?
Oh, no, Blythe is the Kent City, so I'm not.
Check it out right now. You don't want in on this, Joey?
Yeah, I don't know.
96 miles more.
What's the motion again?
It is to wait for the EIR is complete with a report and to ask staff to bring back to look at other cities who have similar projects and find out the best way to get public information.
So are you saying basically you want to wait a year to ask the public their opinion?
No, not at all.
What are you saying?
What I'm hearing is
until an EIR comes out, that's not till the end of 2016.
Is to work on ways to best get public input, either through a survey, through information, through looking at what other people in other communities and stuff like that, so that we can continue to get more public input so we can make a informed decision on where we want to go.
My understanding, and the maker of the motion can clarify for me if I don't have it right, the staff report would come soon, perhaps at the next meeting, on alternate ways of seeking additional public input and a commitment to the environmental impact report process for full disclosure of the impacts of the project.
Point of order on the motion. It seems to me there are two separate subjects tied into the same motion. And I would move to bifurcate them so we could vote on one and then the other if they want to vote either. But to tie in, move it, to tie in a connection to the EIR report as being a time deadline of some sort, or timeline of some sort. Plus, we're going to go out and look at other organizations, other routes, and see what they've done. That's a wholly different subject. And it should be separate from the first.
And that's fine.
That's fine. That's fine.
That sounds like a good idea.
And for what it's worth, if you do bifurcate it, committing to the EIR may not even be necessary because you've already done so.
Right.
So one option would be just simplify the motion to be have staff bring forward a staff report evaluating various public input solicitation efforts.
Very well said. Thank you.
Haven't they already done that? Isn't that what you did when you changed the amount of O&M? You had these people come in with...
No, we're looking at ways to get public input. Is it through, as the hotels in your city have said, we'll survey those people who stay overnight? How can we reach the people who fill our coffers and make our budgets work? And that's important to us.
What about our neighborhoods? I appreciate all the commerce that
you and about. We sir, want you to give input as well.
Sir, please.
I got you.
Thank you. Mrs. Arnott, motion please.
Are we separating?
Yes, we are.
Yes, okay. We're separating. Bifurcation. Let's see that.
As a matter of clarification, we're only voting on the one substitute motion that you've now narrowed down to just looking for some ways to get public input.
Yeah,
the best way to get
the best way.
Yes.
And there are those who have done it before.
And then you don't need to do the EIR.
Yeah, we don't need to bifurcate. We just have one substitute motion. That's it.
That motion we have there, people.
This becomes a substitute motion.
Yes, so we're doing a substitute.
If this passes,
right.
This motion
is a substitute.
This is substituting the cross motion. In fact, we shouldn't be debating.
We should be voting.
Just debate.
Roll call vote, please.
Blight.
Okay, Blight's going to go ahead and vote yes, but as a group, I'm just saying, I'm part of the group. But, you know, it's among you people to work this out. Blight didn't get one penny out of this. I mean, I'm here to work with the team, and Blight, when something comes to Blight, I'd like to get something for Blight, too.
Okay?
Thank you.
Angel City?
Yes.
You had $1 million coming,
yes.
Desert Hot Springs?
Desert Hot Springs, yes. It should be transparent.
Indian Wells?
No.
India?
Yes.
La Quinta?
Yes.
Palm Desert?
Yes.
Palm Springs?
Aye.
Rancho Mirage?
No.
Riverside County 5th District?
Not here.
Not here.
Oh, there's 3 not here. District 4. District 5 votes yes.
The motion carries.
Thank you. Next item is Riverside County update and presentation on Jefferson Street.
Dennis, who do we have to substitute the presentation?
And in this organization, I seem to think the substitute would
be. Would we please have quiet so we can move on to the next item? Thank you.
Well, good evening. My name is Joseph Smith. I am the resident engineer on the Jefferson Street Interchange. I work for TYLM International, and I am a consultant for the Riverside County Transportation Department. And I want to thank Mr. Kirk and Mr. Woods for asking me to come to this committee tonight and present. It's been a very insightful meeting for me. Doing a lot of how things happen here. Before I go further, I just want to thank CBAG for their participation on the Jefferson Street Interchange on behalf of the economy of Riverside. I also want to thank the city of Indio, who has been very instrumental in the success so far of the project. Mr. Eric Weck and Tim Wassel support us weekly at our weekly meetings. And also the city of La Quinta has also been supportive as we move traffic around in through those cities. Of course, Caltrans as well. And my client, Riverside County, they've been an excellent client to work with. So I have 4 slides that show the staging of the project. We're already through the first stage into the second stage. Before I go too much further, I want to introduce Kathleen Mock, who is my office engineer. She works with TYLM as well. And she put together the presentation for me. And Ward Maxwell with the County of Riverside, who is my direct connection on a daily basis for the project, and we've been great to work with side by side. And then the images that were taken by Paul Rodriguez from Skyview Imaging. And you'll see we actually employed his company last week to fly the project so we can get an update for this project and for this presentation. So moving forward. So stage one is complete, but I just want to walk through what we had to do to make sure this happened, the project occurred. So I'm sure everyone's pretty intimately familiar with the project. It functions with the 2 bridges, the Jefferson Street overcrossing, which runs north and south, and then the Indio Boulevard overcrossing, which takes traffic from the southern side of the railroad tracks up and over the interchange and then onto the freeway to back up onto Jefferson Street. The first order of operation in stage one was to build a temporary westbound off-ramp, which most people may be familiar with, this road right here, which takes 10 westbound traffic onto Varner Road, which is the road that runs on the top side of the picture here, and to allow us to start working on the abutment number three, which is the northern portion of the bridge. And we also had to construct the temporary on-ramp, we call this temporary westbound on-ramp, which takes traffic from the bridge up and over and then down and back onto the freeway or north onto Jefferson Street and then Bonner. So this stage is complete. We are now in stage two. So the green, which you see, is a traffic pattern that is in place currently, and this traffic pattern will be in place definitely past the festivals, and that's been one of our key points, is to make sure we do not interrupt with the festivals. This traffic pattern will be in place probably until this time, maybe late summer next year. We have to get both sides of the both bridges complete before we back up on the structure. And about a year from now, this is where the traffic pattern will be. We have to construct two parallel structures. I have pictures of the bridge that we're working on right now. And then once traffic is up on top of the bridge, you can see the westbound on-ramp will be fully functional, which is the loop on-ramp that runs traffic north and then down onto the westbound I-10. And then traffic will still be able to get on direct west end here through this temporary construction as well here. And then finally, stage four is where we start taking everything else apart that's no longer necessary. The Jefferson Street overcrossing here, which is kind of cumbersome with this mouse, but right here. And then, of course, the overcrossing that ran traffic up and above over the interchange will also be removed. So we'll remove the two bridges that are functioning right now, and those will be replaced with two side-by-side structures that will be connected with what we call a closure board at the end of the project. So a snapshot of where we are right now. The project started on April 13th, 2015. It's a $42.3 million project. Construction cost, that was the engine, the bid by Riverside Construction. And I know I thanked quite a number of people before my presentation started, but the contractor for this project has been an exceptional contractor to work with. One of the best that I've worked with in my 25 years of doing this. And they really just want to get the project done, and they've been excellent communicators and really forthcoming with a lot of information. So it's provided a great atmosphere to get to where we are now. Percent complete time is 31.6, that's through last week. And then percent complete dollar-wise is 33%, and that's through our engineer's estimate, which we ran through the 25th of November. And that's a really good spot to be. I mean, to be 31% complete on time, 33% complete construction is really an excellent sweet spot to be. That might change a little bit. The work that we're doing right now is requiring a lot of labor, and the contractor will be paid for this work in January. But once January hits, they'll get another big uptick in cash. Some upcoming closures that we have, we'll actually have one tonight on the westbound lanes to place construction on the shoulders, on the eastbound, I'm sorry, the westbound auxiliary lanes, we call them, which is a lane that will run from the westbound on-ramp, ultimately on the right shoulder, as you approach towards Washington Street. We are placing forms of reinforcing steel on top of the bridge intermittently throughout December and January. And then we will grade what we call the superstructure later in this month, in the early January. And we have a large concrete pour. That's a 2,600 cubic yard concrete pour, which is a big operation. That's going to be a good 12, 14-hour day for the contractor. And that will happen in early January. So just to orient you on these aerial photographs that Mr. Rodriguez took, to the right is north. The interchange runs to the upper right-hand corner and the lower left-hand corner. Westbound is obviously north and eastbound. So as you can see, the temporary westbound off-ramp is on the bottom of the picture there. That's already in operation. And then here is a little bit better picture. Now traffic is in fully functioning on the off-ramp, and then this temporary westbound on-ramp, which brings traffic here and jumps people back onto the freeway here or north onto Jefferson Street and then Varner Road. And this is a structure that we're constructing right now. To orient you for bridge terminology, we go from south to north and then from left to right. So southern portion of this project and the bridge this portion is called abutment one, which is, you know, terminology here, and then the bent is in the median, and then abutment three is on the north part here. I have some, little closer pictures of this, but just to tell you. So now we're working on the left bridge, and then once the left bridge construction completed, we will construct the right bridge. Another aerial photograph. Instrumental also is the westbound off-ramp. So what will happen here is traffic will eventually come off westbound. It'll connect to this ramp about here and then run up right about here to this location here. You can see also the westbound on-ramp loop is in pretty good shape here. It's visible. This project is requiring 400,000 cubic yards of import material, which is a lot of material. And the contractor was fortunate to get a good portion of it from the city of Indio's yard down by 42nd and Jefferson with the developer there that had that material. So it worked really well for them. This is on the west side of the project. To orient you, this is the CHP facility here. This is Varner Road that runs in front of that. There will be a direct westbound on-ramp. This is the existing Jefferson Bridge, which will eventually disappear, but the bridge that we're constructing is to the left side of the screen, which is not visible, and the direct westbound on-ramp will go right through all this work and then continue onto the freeway here. And then tonight's work, we are pouring some of the foundation work for the acceleration lane, which is on the right side of the 10 westbound. So this is a structure. It's a pretty significant bridge. The deeper structure that I personally have worked on, the superstructure itself, which is the portion that you see, basically the band running across, is 10 feet 6 inches tall, which is as tall as this room here, which is a pretty significant structure. Most structures run about 5 to 6 feet thick, and this is twice the thickness of that. And once again, a nice aerial photograph of a westbound on-ramp. So this will be a direct connection. When the right bridge is complete, traffic will come up here and travel onto the westbound on-ramp and then get onto the freeway. I also mentioned there's active transportation on the bridge. There's two bike paths, one on each side, northbound and southbound, and then a sidewalk on the right bridge that will be constructed next year. Milestones of the project was the temporary westbound off-ramp that I mentioned. The construction of Jefferson Street going north, which is the right picture, and then the import of about 140,000 cubic yards to build that temporary westbound on-ramp that is now functioning. And then we drove 561 steel piles. And this was a big operation. And the contractor moved extremely fast with this. They were able to get all the bearing required on all the piles, but because of the material, the sand, they were able to move pretty quickly and actually force the... That was their subcontractor that drove the piles and forced the prime to actually change some things around. So we worked with Caltrans and the designer to adjust a few things and help them accelerate work on the north side of the project to allow us to continue to construct. False work went up as people have been, if you've traveled east and west along the I-10 over the last month or so, you've seen what we call, this is the false work. This is the temporary timber and steel that's necessary for us to ultimately pour the concrete that once it gains its own strength, all this material eventually comes down and it reveals the ultimate structure. This is work, as you're looking on the left picture, you're looking south. These gentlemen are tied off, as you can see, they're in safe condition. These are steel stringers that were placed over the freeway and on the right side as well. The three elements that you see on the right picture, those are the columns that extend into the superstructure that I was mentioning earlier. And this is some of the dirt pictures that pictures of the dirt we brought in. There's been work on the shoulders. I think if you've been traveling through, you see we've had cable along both sides, and we're trying to demolish the existing auxiliary lanes and then reconstruct them and to widen them and then ultimately put a new barrier rail on the outside as well. And this was the old off-ramp that came up, and we eliminated that with the temporary westbound off-ramp and took all that material. But an interesting project on a number of facets because a lot of the dirt is there on the job, but the contractor can't access it until future stages, so he's had to figure ways to move things around and make it all happen to maintain traffic. And that's been a big component of the project. One of the key features is the architectural treatment on the project. As you can see on the left-hand side, that's what we call a mold that was used to ultimately create the panel that the concrete was poured against to create the effect on the right-hand side. Those are the columns in the middle. On the bench, you can see we have the palm tree and then the swirl pattern. The motif on the project is drifting sand, and the idea is that if you were to put your finger in sand and kind of twirl it around, this is the effect that you would get, and that came out very well. I mentioned the contractor being exceptional to work with. They have excellent carpenters that really pay attention to detail, and they work with us, and they actually came up with multiple molds for us to look at after they poured concrete, and they had some ideas that they bounced back on us, and then we actually came together with a unified way to move forward, and this is the effect that we have so far on the columns, and it's going to look really nice when it's done. I have some other pictures. So these are the panels on the wall. On the previous photographs, I should have mentioned that we have a 50-foot, what we call it's a mechanically stabilized earth wall. These are a succession of panels that will ultimately make, as you can see, a drifting sand pattern. There's hundreds and hundreds of these panels that will be delivered to our project, and will ultimately create the wall that will be on the eastbound off-ramp to allow traffic to come up and then on top of the bridge. This is adjacent to the UP railroad right-of-way on the south side of the project. We aren't necessarily working in it right-of-way, but we definitely have to get a right of entry to allow us to work near the right-of-way. So this is a shot looking southwest towards the bridge to give you some ideas of how this is. Once again, this is on top of the bridge here, so you see the gentlemen that are working inside the bridge are completely encapsulated by the forms. Another really cool shot, if you look, this is looking north on the left bridge. And at this point, we have reinforcing steel inside the structure. Ultimately, over the next 2 or 3 weeks, this will continue to progress. We'll have forms placed so that concrete can be placed inside the forms. And then the bottom portion of the superstructure will be complete, and then the deck will be placed later on in January. One of the key facets of this project is one of the new specs that Caltrans has imposed on bridge elements that are thick and significant, anything greater than 7 feet in least dimension, what they call a mass concrete specification, and that's a little technical, but what it requires is the concrete has to be cooled in order for it to cure properly. And what these are actual cooling tubes that are running through the bridge. This is on top of the columns, essentially a large rectangular concrete block that runs on top of the columns. And as the concrete is poured, the contractor will run cooling water through these tubes so that the concrete cures appropriately and that they get the desired effect. And that it's meant to increase the longevity of the structure from 50 years now to a 70-year lifespan on structures, and that's the intent of Caltrans. We did this also for the columns and also for the footings, but this is a little bit different because on those, they're able to control the temperature through insulation. In this case, they're actually going to have to run cold water through them, similar to the Hoover Dam. That's exactly what they did there as well. Some more photographs of the architectural detail. This is the southerly abutment number one. You can see the drifting sand pattern. We didn't get a photo before the falls were going up, but this is what that wall will be visible if you're going on eastbound on-ramp. So if you're on top of the bridge and you're looping onto the eastbound on-ramp, you'll essentially run right through where basically that space is, and that wall will be on the right-hand side, and you'll be able to enjoy the architectural treatment there as well. And if you were to go on the RCT website for the Jefferson Street Interchange, you'll see it's about a 3 or 4 minute presentation, a rendering of what the ultimate interchange will be. And we thought it would be good to show a couple of snapshots of that. So this is the wall I was mentioning. This is 50 feet tall. It's an MSC wall. And this is the eastbound offering. So to orient you, this is the northbound. So once again, if you're coming from Indio, Jefferson on the other side of the railroad tracks, you'll come up here. And if you want to get on the 10 West, this is the big loop on ramp. I'm having another shot of that. And go underneath this bridge and get on the freeway. And then if you're heading eastbound, you want to get off on the construction, this is the eastbound off ramp. And then this is the eastbound on ramp that will run right through there. And that was the shot I just showed. So this is the wall that I just showed, that the architectural treatment. And then the panels that I showed, this is ultimately what it will look like. It will just be a succession of panels connected together that will create this wall to allow us to create that off-ramp. And this is another rendering looking west, and that's the westbound on-ramp. And then one of the cool features, it's kind of hard to see, but we'll have a nice large Indio sign here, and then we have some palm trees attached to the structure. And this is all made up with mulch and gravel and rock to make that really nice architectural intent at the end of the project. So been a great job so far. Really, we're right on schedule, and we flushed through most of the issues, and we continue to move forward. So, thank you very much.
Are there any questions?
I have a comment.
Sure.
I can't believe I'm saying this, and I probably wouldn't have 4 years ago before I got involved with transportation, but that is a beautiful interchange. Mm-hmm. It really is so, the lines are, it's just gorgeous.
Yeah, RBF, Michael Baker did a really nice job. Caltrans did a great job. RCTV, anybody involved. And I'm honestly, you know, I'm honored to be the resident engineer on the project. It's really a great experience.
The communication on the closure, shutdown, three routes, I feel like the communication's been very good. I've received really no complaints from residents. I live in La Quinta, I work in Indio. We've got people coming from across the valley to the hospital where I work. So they're commuting there. And the beauty is there's alternate routes while you're constructing this thing. And people get to watch it in progress. And, I knock on wood, I think it's going well. And it is a beautiful honor.
And to that, I'm sorry that Keith, I know people have been here for a long time, but I would be remiss if I didn't mention Dennis Green, who has been really instrumental in our public outreach. He's been excellent. And then, of course, with the city of Indio, City of La Quinta, and Caltrans as well. So, thank you.
Thank you. It's a great project. It looks like it's very complicated and challenging. So it looks like you've done a great job.
Thank you very much.
Okay, moving on. Informational items. Are there any questions on any of the informational items? We won't take them individually unless there's a question on any one of them. Seeing none, there's nothing held over from the consent calendar. We've already taken care of that. Upcoming meetings would be the Tactical Advisory Committee meeting on Monday, January 11th, 2016, at 11 a.m. The Executive Committee meeting will be on Monday, January 25th, 2016, at 4:30. I wish you all a happy holidays.
One thing ahead, and Greg kind of started on it, and then we kind of went in a different direction. But it's important that your community members know about this RTP-SCS, too, because we need their input to do the best job. This is an important document, and it is what ensures that we get our funding from the federal government. So we need input, and that's my city manager. So if everybody can...
Meeting is adjourned.